Hello and welcome back to True Crime Guys Podcast. I'm your host, Michael, and Andy is back with me again today. Thank you, Andy.
Do you feel the power? There's so much fog in here.
I told you to quit vaping in the studio, Andy.
I mean, it's a bad habit.
Anyways, guys, if you joined us last week, we were talking headlines and shenanigans, and we talked P. Diddy. Who isn't talking P. Diddy right now, right?
Did he do it? I don't know, Andy.
I don't know. We also talked to Easter Heist.
That was actually a pretty fun case right there. I'm still curious about that. There's still been no breaks in that case. So I'm like I said, is there like
good
a time?
Good for them, man.
So like a time, it's like a time limit where they're like, all right, man, if we don't find any breaks in this in the first 35 days, like, I mean, we.
You mean good, like a statute of limitations?
Almost like the,
you know, I feel like that's a. It's going to be a pretty long time for that amount of money.
Yeah, it's like the first 48 TV show where it's just like, I mean, if we can't catch them in the first 48 hours, we're probably never going to catch them.
That's
it's like
right.
This money thing, it's like, I mean, if we don't see this money in like the first few weeks, I mean, do we keep looking?
Like, exactly.
Like eventually it'll like get back around, right?
Right.
It all goes into circulation, you know.
Exactly. But speaking of burglars that were hard to catch, on Patreon we talked about the ghost burglar. Who basically was only caught by his last victim, of course, right?
By his own actions.
His last victim ran him down in a car in the most extreme fashion. But there is so many interesting things about this guy. Mr. Bernard C. Welch. Interesting character, Andy. Quite the distinguished gentleman. Also had a couple escapes from prison.
Yeah, he
quite a character.
He was a real character, man. I loved his house. Like I said, it was like Scarface on steroids, man.
Yeah, he was like Gru from Despicable Me.
Really was. He was like the Walter White of it all, too. It was like, he really was this unsuspecting guy just living in your normal neighborhood. Don't step in my yard. I will know.
You will know. Oh, yeah. He had a crazy house. It was like, the security system was insane. But anyways, guys, check that out. Patreon.com/truecrimeguys. There's links right below the description of this episode. Also, please subscribe. Check out True Crime Guys on YouTube. Check out our shorts that we are posting on the daily. So you can get ideas of what we're covering on Strange and Unexplained. And you can always catch new episodes of Strange and Unexplained on YouTube, as well as wherever you listen to podcasts. But for today, speaking of YouTube, I'm not ashamed to say I got this case from Mr. Ballin, Andy.
Listen, like, at least you found a good source for it. I was struggling to find one.
There is not much coverage on this at all.
Not in our native tongue.
No, exactly. Like I said, I got this case from Mr. Ballin. It happened in 1990. And if the murder and dismemberment don't get you in this case, Andy, the ghost will.
Yay, another ghost story?
That's right, another ghost story, except for this is more supernatural. It's kind of the whole point.
Ooh, like a real ghost. All right,
all right. Yeah.
I like
floating heads, all that kind of stuff.
I like some spooky.
Spooky. All right, well, let's roll that intro.
Ooh.
Life goes hand in hand with death. Even a precocious end means no doom. A living man yestereve. Today, I am on the register of the ghosts. Where is my soul scattered? My withered body in a wood box is confined. In tears, my beloved sons seek their father. My endeared friends sob while caressing me. No longer do I know loss or gain, nor distinguish right from wrong. After 1,000 autumns and 10,000 years, who can tell glory from shame? The only thing I do regret is not having drunk enough while living. How abundantly grow the wild weeds. How mournfully rustle the poplars. In September, in the frost, I am carried to the distant countryside. Not a single soul in the neighborhood, but a myriad of elevated tombs. Turning their heads towards the sky, the horses neigh. Sadly, howls the wind. The dark dwelling is closed. For 1,000 years, the day will not dawn. Even the sage can do nothing about it. Those who accompanied me returned each to his home. Some relatives are still lamenting. Others began to chant. What else could be done with a dead man but consign his corpse to a hill?
So on April 2nd, 1990, 23-year-old Mariko Iguchi, a fourth-year college student, decided she wanted to take a vacation to Taiwan. Now, in the 1980s and 90s, it was very common for Japanese students to travel to Taiwan because, well, because it was heavily advertised to them.
Honestly. Oh, it was a tourist attraction.
And it was close, you know, and it was relatively safe. So Mariko's parents, they really weren't worried about their daughter traveling to Taiwan alone. Now, Mariko's first stop was Taipei, where she checked into a budget hotel and got to vacationing. She didn't bother calling her parents right away when she got there because, you know, she had to pay international call fees. You know, this is 1990, yeah. Andy. I mean, come on. Who's got that kind of money? She's trying to save it for the vacation.
Call collect. Where are you calling collect?
Exactly. But the next day, she did buy a postcard and she sent it home to her parents. She's not a monster.
I mean, of course. You got to check in.
You got to.
I do miss the days of postcards. I mean, that was kind of, it was kind of a nice way of just being like, listen, I'm not going to like take up too much of my time by like calling and like telling you about everything I see.
Right. Here's the highlights.
I'm just going to like sit down one night after I'm done with a few things. Like, I'm just going to hit you with a few bullet points and like, this is pretty cool here. I like this. Good shrimp. XOXO. Stamp.
Yeah. Postcards were like the first random text.
It was.
You know, you just get a random text from a friend you haven't heard from in a long time, and it's like, hey, blah 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 blah. Let's catch up. Oh, it's like, oh wow. Nice.
Yeah, just it was a postcard was a pre-pager.
That's right.
It was like a pre-beeper. So you got a postcard from somebody. It wasn't a full letter, it was just a little postcard.
Exactly. All right, so the next day on April 4th, Mariko decided to take the train to Tainan City. Now, fresh off the train in Tainan, she called for a cab. Making conversation, she found that her cab driver's name was Lee. So, Lee drove Mariko to a few different hotels, but all of them were either too expensive for her or they just had no vacancies.
This was a tourist destination at this point.
Yes. So, Lee proposed that Mariko stay with him at his home. Now, at this time, that may sound weird, but it was actually very common in Taiwan for cab drivers to offer homes or already have homes in mind of friends or relatives that were ready to house tourists.
It's still so strange. And I get that it's a totally different culture. And I guess it's just very different for us. It's like, I could see like cab drivers being in league with like Airbnb hosts or like, you know, little bed and breakfast or just hotels. Like cab drivers kind of like, yeah, I know a hotel. My buddy works at a hotel.
Exactly.
He can get you a room. But literally just being like, oh yeah, I have a spare room. Or like, oh yeah, my sister's out of town. You can stay there. Or just literally just being like, oh yeah, I know a place and just taking you to my nephew's house.
Yeah.
Like, that's just I know it's strange, but it's pre-Airbnb at this point, but still, like, that is shocking.
The level of trust is insane, but it was just commonplace.
It was so regular. Much trust.
And it was also the demand, because Tainan, in particular, relies on tourism. And obviously, cab drivers benefit greatly from tourism. So, you know, they don't want these tourists coming to their city and then having to leave because they literally can't find a place to stay.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think it kind of pushed it over time.
You'd almost expect to see
it so common.
It's like, I feel like if this was America, it'd be like a lot of cab drivers who like pulled into a town with like a pull behind RV. And like they just drove around in their car and they would just take their guests back to the RV. And like, you can stay here and I'll sleep in my car.
There you go.
It's like that. Like I could see that in like an American culture almost, but not like the whole idea of like, yeah, just come back to my house, stay in my guest room.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I got an RV outside. You can stay in the RV. I'll sleep in the car.
Even that seems weird.
I'd be
like, this place is bugged, man. There's cameras everywhere.
Oh yeah. I'm not touching anything.
God.
How about I sleep in your car?
Yeah. Exactly. Now the following 2 days, Lee enthusiastically drove Mariko wherever she wanted to go. He took her to the night market and all kinds of local hotspots. And on April 7th, Lee dropped Mariko off at the Tainan train station, where Mariko sent a postcard home for her parents. And then she took the train to Kaohsiung City. The next day on April 8th, Mariko was supposed to have boarded a plane in Kaohsiung City back to Japan. Meanwhile, Mariko's mother was waiting at the airport for her daughter's United Airlines flight 828. But when the plane landed, Mariko wasn't on it. Her mother asked the flight staff if Mariko was on the plane, but according to their records, Mariko didn't even board the flight at Kaohsiung Airport. But she was seen getting off the train in Kaohsiung City.
I'm just so proud of you for even picking this case, just because these are some hard pronunciations.
They are. And I might still not be doing it correctly.
I think you're doing a better job than I would have, so I'm just going to go ahead. Like I say,
I'm going to try to be consistent.
Yes.
Let's do that. If I'm wrong, I'll be consistently wrong.
That's the best way to do it.
And then you'll know what that sound that I'm making represents in this story.
I love
that. And that is the most important thing.
I love the idea of being consistently wrong. It's the best sales pitch anyone ever gave me one time. I was trying to buy a paintball gun, and it was like, well, I mean, when you shoot it, it kind of goes to the left. But it's like every time, so like it's like consistently goes to the left. And I just the straightest like
aim 3 o'clock, dude.
Like, so did you just tell me it consistently sucks? Like, what the?
Well, it's better than it shooting to the right sometimes. Yes. Sometimes up.
Yeah, it just kind of shoots in a spiral. We don't really know where it goes.
But anyways, Mariko's mother booked a flight to Taiwan right away and called the local police when she arrived. Now, since it was an overseas person that was missing, the Taiwan police made it a priority. You know, they don't want this loom of unsafety in their city. Like, this is bad press.
Oh, yeah.
Very bad press. Now, a search team of police and volunteers, they actually searched for several months, but never found any trace of Mariko. So, with basically no leads, the police decided to check out the last person to see her, old Lee. But Lee's alibi was pretty airtight, and there was record of Mariko leaving the station at Kaohsiung. So, with nothing solid to hold him or even suspect him, really, they let him go. Now, 2 months later, on June 27, 1990, the police formed the 0407 Joint Task Force, and the family of Mariko also offered a reward of 50 million yen.
Like, I don't know exactly what the currency exchange rate, but anytime you put a million in there, I'm just like, I'm interested.
It's probably like 50 grand or so.
Either way, I'm really just like, not million? Sure. What?
Yeah, look that up on your phone, Andy. Like, you got your phone right there. What is 50 million yen?
We'll get to it.
Okay. So, with continuous media coverage of the incident, many citizens began to provide clues to the police. And most were bullshit, honestly. Until July 7th, when the police received a tip that Mariko had been murdered and was buried in a cemetery in Tainan. The police immediately conduct a large-scale search, but nothing was found. Right? There's a lot of red herrings in this case, man. But what is it? What is it? What's the amount?
Oh, that is actually, I got that rate for you. It's 323 grand. So it's like, and some change.
50
yeah.
million yen is 323 grand.
Yeah, and some change, yeah.
So that's still nothing to slouch at, man.
No, that's still a handsome, like, ransom.
A third of $1 million, man.
Yeah, for a college student, that's still a pretty good ransom for just a tourist. This wasn't a celebrity. This wasn't, you know, this wasn't any kind of like person of like, you know, interest or anything like this. This was just a regular person.
Her family had money.
Yeah, you got some money to offer.
Should have put her up in an expensive hotel and she wouldn't have to stay in this guy's hotel. Freaking.
Nobody calls ahead. Nobody makes reservations.
God, I'm
no one's got daddy's credit card.
Exactly.
Come on.
Unfortunately, it wasn't until October when the police learned from Lee's taxi company that he suffered from mental illness and could be prone to violence under pressure. Apparently, there was an incident where he snapped on a coworker, and I'm sure, like, after they initially investigated him, they probably talked to his place at work and was like, hey, if anything happens, let us know. Anything, you know, that would, anything strange?
Yeah.
Let us know. And this was one of those instances.
Or I bet this is probably, like, they need to go ask the taxi cab company. It's like, let's get in touch with this Lee guy.
Yeah.
And after they interview him, I bet they're like, yeah, we got nothing. And then probably one of his coworkers is like, you got nothing from him? Because we got some stuff on from him. Like, we could.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm sure exactly. Somebody at that cab driver company was like, shit, I got some stuff I could tell you about Lee.
Exactly. So, well, I mean, you know, that, like I said, there was an incident where he snapped on a coworker, and I'm sure it wasn't his first. And in addition to this, around this exact same time, a person called who claimed they were a colleague of Lee, and they said that he'd been behaving very strange recently. He had, like, pasted yellow papers like all on his windows of like drawings of like talismans and spiritual things to like keep him safe, and he was putting them up in this taxi windows, and then he was putting Buddha statues like all over his cab, all on the dash, you know, on the center console, just all over the place in the back seat with the rider, whatever, and he said it was to rid off, you know, like evil spirits.
It's like almost like a character from like an Exorcist movie, like someone who's suffering from like a possession or someone who thinks that they are there's a definite demon following them.
Exactly. And his friend was saying that, you know, albeit this stuff might not seem that weird, but he just seems so like, he seems under such duress that he might do something rash.
Oh, yeah.
Is what they're saying.
When you see someone doing like that, when they stop behaving, like, not even just rationally, but they start, like I said, posting up their windows with paper, and they got symbols drawn everywhere, and they won't look outside. Like, it's no longer. Also,
that's a safety hazard. Yeah, it's like, you need to take those down. You are a driver, sir.
You're driving around like Spike from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The whole car is just painted black on the inside. It's like, how do you see?
Sir, the evil spirits.
Just post-it notes everywhere.
Yeah. So with these two phone calls, the police decided to give Lee another look. And when they found him in his taxi, he was actually relieved to see the police and gladly went back to the station with them. Before the police could even ask, he confessed and admitted that he indeed did kill Mariko.
Wow. I was like I said, it was like, there was not even like a real investigation into him to an extent. They just like opened the door.
He was getting ready to crack. He was like, thank God it's you.
Yeah, for an extent.
And you'll see why. So he went into the whole spiel. He said he saw Mariko carrying a backpack alone in front of Kaohsiung Station on April 7th last year. Of course he did, because he knew that she was headed there.
Oh, yeah.
See what I'm saying?
She took the train. Off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then he was there. And since Mariko had already stayed with Lee, she trusted him, right? She's like, oh, what are the odds?
Yeah, you're would you not too? Think that's not strange? It's like right? This guy who you know lives in this city because mm-hmm. you stayed at his house and then you told him where you were going and he beats you there.
And I'm sure Mariko was relieved too, right? She would have to be. She's already spent days with this man, driving her around, living in his house.
I feel like I don't know. It's like, I think he maybe says she was relieved, but like, I feel like that's
no,
kind of
I'm
like
just, a, no, he didn't say anything. I'm just speculating. You're in a place where you don't know anyone,
I
right?
Still and then you run into somebody. Flag. Like when you take a train to a different city and you know that this person who you've been staying with for a couple of days lives here, you've been to their house, you know they work here, and you told them that you were going to this city, and like, he like didn't mention that he's like, oh yeah, me too. I'm going there to work as well. Like just right. like literally you get off the train.
And What's the range of this cab service?
Like I said, like literally you get off the train and it's basically him like standing at the train station with like a little sign with your name, like Mariko. It's like, hey
Lee.
Great to see you.
Wow.
Like I feel like it's gotta be a bit of a red flag, regardless of like how he may have thought about it or how even like the police thought of it. That's gotta be a red flag.
Well, either way, She trusted him, and she went back to Mariko's home, where he proceeded to make sexual advances towards her, which she obviously denied, and out of shame or rage or both, he killed Mariko. And he did it by using a crossbow, where he proceeded to shoot 4 arrows into Mariko's head, which killed her instantly. Then he chopped off her head and put it in a plastic bag.
I feel like that instantly thing is questionable. Like, I bet if one shot maybe did it, but that's 4 crossbow bolts.
4. I'm like, talking about by the 4th one, though.
Oh, yeah, but I'm still...
I'm
it's
talking about
like,
by 4.
Because I don't know, like, crossbows aren't repeating at this point still, are they? Like, but still, like, at this... In 1990, that's a load of bolt.
No, that is a...
Yeah.
Brutal death.
Pull it slowly, recock that thing, reload it.
Yeah.
That's 4 crossbow shots. Like
in case
Daryl.
It wasn't bad enough, Andy's breaking it down.
Well, I'm just saying it's like...
I know,
it's,
for
it's,
real.
It's not like one of those like quick crimes of passion or like where it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's not like he pulled an actual gun in one shot. It's
right.
like to reload a crossbow 4 times and shoot the head. Not like shoot different parts
Can
of the body.
Imagine being shot in the head and then waiting for him to reload. Like
if you're still conscious.
If you're like, still conscious.
But yeah, because it's not like he shot her in the leg while she was running away and he had to reload and shoot her again. It's like this was 4 headshots. So it's like shoot ahead, walk up, shoot her again, cock it, shoot her. That's so just, yeah, that's not
it's
a crime
insane.
Of passion anymore.
Four, right?
It's not a crime of passion anymore, dude. This doesn't matter what you're like, doesn't matter
right.
what
it's
your
so
alibi
much,
is.
It's so much worse than 4 gunshots. Isn't
yes.
It really is because... You know, you'll see a lot of times when somebody fires the first time, they might fire again afterwards,
mm-hmm.
just out of like reflex. And they even put that shit in movies. It happens so often.
Oh yeah.
But like with a crossbow, that is not what happened, my friend.
No, and then to cut the head off as well, it's like that's overkill. Like you either, if you're making sure she's dead by shooting her repeatedly, it's like why are you cutting the head off? It's
exactly.
Like, so what? Yeah, this is not a crime of passion anymore. You can very much tell that this has some sense of premeditation to it.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, he stayed with her a couple days, and he must have got some like false, you know, delusion in his head to where he thought it was something else, and planned this whole thing out to where it's like, well, if she doesn't do this, like I've got my crossbow like ready to go.
Yep.
Because that's another thing. You can't just walk up to someone with an unloaded crossbow and then be like, hold on, stand still. Let me just... It's like loading a musket to an extent. Like, it's, you know, you better walk up to it loaded.
Yeah. I mean, he had to go get it. Obviously, they're not having, you know, he's not making sexual advances with the crossbow in his hand. Or if he was, that was a bad play. That may be why she denied you.
That was again, maybe a red
maybe
flag.
Leave maybe the crossbow flag. Next time out of the bedroom. It does not belong in the bedroom.
Crossbows do not belong in the bedroom.
That's right.
I'm not here to kink shame, but...
I'm just saying... Used in their traditional form, they do not belong in the bedroom.
Rubber tips, ribbed and rubbered.
Yeah, there we go. Now you're getting some visuals. But the crossbow, as well as Mariko's backpack, were discarded in different places. But after disposing of the body, not the head, fearing the smell, Lee poured gasoline on it and burned it. And he did the same to the mattress that Mariko slept on while staying with him, basically erasing the evidence that Mariko was ever there, or at least in his mind.
Trying to, at least.
Trying to. Now, after Lee confessed to the crime, he was taken into custody. And after many interrogations after the fact, on March 9th, the police found under the roots of a big tree out in the open on 13th Street in Chongming, Tainan City, there was more than 100 bones found, and it was later confirmed that they all belonged to Mariko Iguchi. Unfortunately, Mariko's head was never found because Lee disposed of it at a local dump, and, you know, remember, it's been a year since the murder, so no such luck. Now, in this last year, basically, Lee has been tortured, allegedly. That's why he was so excited to see the police. Is that he was dealing with basically Mariko's ghost in his apartment.
Oh, yeah. He thought it was a full-blown haunting.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, the man was absolutely losing his mind, like, terrified to go into his apartment to use the restroom.
But yet he still did that. That's the strangest
part.
But
he still did that. You, I mean, you got to go, Andy.
Yeah, like, I'm a shameful shitter. I have to poop in my house. Like, that's my space.
Like spirit or not, I'm shitting in my house.
That's my throne.
Yeah.
I got the padded seat and everything.
You're kicking me off my throne.
Exactly. We were at war over this. You can have the kitchen.
But yeah, he claimed that, you know, there was one instance where she was chasing him around the apartment and he ran out and barely shut the door in time, right, of course. Mm-hmm. And, you know, none of his neighbors corroborate this. All they say is that he has weird rituals when he gets home. He, you know, he opens the door, looks, shuts, opens the door, looks, shuts. Apparently he full-on believed in this haunting. He said that her head was literally chasing him around, screaming, why? And that's why he so willingly confessed.
Yeah, they said his co-workers were like, this guy is losing his mind. He's like running from a building and diving into his car and you can't see inside of it and then you can't get him to open the door.
So realistically, you know me, Andy, I'm not a ghost guy. I have to say it's the guilt, right? It just got to him.
I feel like it probably is, because
I feel like he acted out of absolute rage and anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this guy's been pent up. Maybe it's been a while. You know what I'm saying? And this last denial was last he could take.
I'm not giving him an excuse,
piece of shit, but I'm just saying.
No, but I think you might be onto something with the rage and the guilt, because there is, I can't remember exactly what they're called, but like the culture or the ghost in that culture that is like the Ju-on, the grudge type mm-hmm. ghost, or the ring type, or is it Ringu or something like that? Yeah. That's the ring, but like that Ju-on type grudge of like someone that is killed in such a fit of rage or something that they will haunt and like kill back.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that's a real belief that's been in that culture for a long time, then someone who might believe in the supernatural and have a leaning towards it, if they accidentally kill someone in that fit of rage, then they might genuinely believe.
Definitely wasn't an accident, though. Yeah, we covered that with four
crossbow shots. Like, yeah, I shouldn't have said accident. If he kills somebody in a fit of rage, they may then believe that ghost is now haunting, that spirit, that rage demon or the, whatever, I can't remember what they are called, but yes, that spirit is now haunting them because they believe in that culture. They believe in that thing that's been like that boogeyman, that type of, you know, ghost in the woods type spirit or whatever that's been told to them since they were children. Now he believes it. He killed someone in a fit of pure rage, unjust, like there's no self-defense here. There's nothing you can defend this with.
You know, and maybe he deserved it, but I think it did actually turn him crazy. Oh. You know, because the first eval, he tested normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fine. But then later, once he's arrested a year later, he mm-hmm. is like, they're like, okay, well, he's kind of messed up now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we feel, guy? Like, to the point that the court felt bad to give him the death penalty, you know? They were like, let's just give him life.
It's like, this guy is pretty broken now. This guy clearly, yeah. It's one of those things that's like, you're not,
you know,
if
rightfully so. I wish all murderers were punished like that.
To an extent, yeah. It's like, that would be a great punishment. If you killed somebody in cold blood, if you got haunted, that'd be great. Yeah. Hauntings, if that was the only way you get haunted.
You know, just be made the guilt just wear you down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, get that Ghost Rider stare.
Seriously.
Just have Ghost Rider come in, give you the penance stare. Everything you've ever done. Feel the guilt.
Feel it. Yeah,
it's like,
pretty much.
Feel the guilt. All right, you're free to go.
All right.
Just walk away, just a shell of a human being. Yeah, that'd be a fair punishment.
Yeah, I think it would be, it's better than anything else, I think.
It's better than, it's obviously definitely better than putting an innocent person to death or putting someone to death because you just think they may be a danger to society one day without ever actually even attempting to see if you could rehabilitate them.
I think if he doesn't get arrested, he commits suicide.
No, yeah, I don't think I think at this point, yeah, in his mental state, I think he's either going to just come and confess, like he's either going to just run into a police station one day screaming, or he's jumping off a bridge somewhere. Yeah. I don't think he's letting this, he can't live with this. Mm-hmm. He can't hide it. He can't go and like pretend like it doesn't happen. Obviously, it's been a year and you've lost your mind.
Exactly.
So it's like, it doesn't seem like he's going to continue. He's not going to go out and do this again or something like that. It's like, dude, if this was what happened when your first victim, like you did something to him, I don't see this person being a further danger to society. I see him being a danger to themselves.
Right.
But not to society.
No. You know what's a benefit to society though?
I don't know. What is it, Michael?
It is Oh My God.
Ooh, that's a good benefit.
Snuck that segue right in there. You didn't even know it was coming, dude.
That is our benefits package here.
That's right. Oh My God is an innovative, all-natural deodorant, fragrance, and beard oil company specializing in paraben and aluminum-free products. Their innovative line of deodorants inhibit the growth of odor-causing bacteria while maintaining effectiveness. And guys, Oh My God has tons of scents to choose from, and we have our very own scent. True Crime Pine. If you don't know where to start, that's a great place. It's an OG scent, if I say so myself.
Oh, yeah. I put that on my beard now.
It's been around for a hot minute. That's right. You can get beard oils, too.
That's why I get my beard all nice and shiny and smelling good.
There's also Barbershop, Sailor, Sweet Pea, Pear, Bergamot Amber, Fireside, Honeysuckle, Lumberjack, Leather, Dreamsicle, Coconut, Egyptian Musk, and so many more, guys. And there's new scents being added all the time at ohmygaia.com. Now, because you're True Crime Guys listeners, you can use the code word CREEPER for 15% off your order. That's CREEPER for 15% off at shop_OhMyGaia on Instagram or OhMyGaia.com, OhMyGaia.com. And there is a link to Oh My Gaia and the keyword, if you didn't hear me say it multiple times, CREEPER, right below the description of this episode. But anyways, guys, appreciate it. Give Oh My Gaia a try. Check them out on Instagram. Help support the people that support us. We appreciate it very much. Speaking of supporting us, check out Patreon. Patreon.com/truecrimeguys, where you can get access to everything we create, as well as extended versions of these regular episodes. On Patreon, usually me and Andy, we sit and we talk maybe 10, 15, sometimes 20 minutes before we get into recording, just kind of a warm-up. And on Patreon, we throw that shit at the end of the episode, so you can see what it's like.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a little look behind the scenes. Sometimes it's funny talk. Sometimes it's Andy adjusting his mic for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
you never know what you're going to get.
It's however long it takes for when Michael actually tells me we're recording.
Exactly.
He's like, we've been recording. See the red line?
You see that? We've been recording.
See the red line?
That's right. But that's just a snippet of all the extra content that's available at patreon.com/truecrimeguys. There's a link right below the description of this episode. All right, guys, that's pretty much it. Follow us on social media at True Crime Guys. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube. Please leave a review if you haven't, or a rating if you're on Spotify. And yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Andy?
Anything? Oh, I don't think so. Like I said, guys, keep checking out our YouTube channel. Comment on some of those videos. Look for a new Strange Unexplained video coming out real soon.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's pretty much it. All right, guys, we'll see you back here with another True Crime Guys proper episode next week. Until then, keep on creeping.
Bye.